All right.
How's it going out there, y'all? Welcome to Extra Crispy, a podcast of curious conversations on culture, creativity, and spirituality with me, your host, Crispin Schroeder. So, last several episodes, I've been doing these mono crisp episodes. It's just been me and my microphone. It's not that I haven't wanted to interview some people. I just had some things I've had to share, get off my chest. That's why I have this podcast. It's just cathartic. But today, I feature a conversation I had last week with one of my favorite songwriters, one of the most prolific songwriters I know, John Barnett. In the church, John Barnett has become well-known for many of the worship songs he's written over the years. And his wife, Marie, she's written a bunch of songs as well. John lives up in Montana, and for several years now, he has been producing a series of albums called the Cabin Fever Sessions, where he's put together a group of different musicians and songwriters, and they've just all come together and made some music, and they've been some fantastic albums. And most recently, he and his son produced an album called Only Hymns, where they took some old hymns and kind of reimagined hymns that did not have music written for them. So, and Only Hymns is a terrific album as well. John's become known for his style of worship music is very much rooted in American roots music, Americana. And John occupies an interesting place in the spectrum of Christian worship music out there, because it is a far cry from most of what you hear in kind of popular circles. But what I love about it is there is such a lyrical depth to it that is rare to find in a lot of modern worship. So enough about that. You can hear me talk about John Barnett all day, but how about you hear from the man himself? So let's do this thing. Extra Crispy. Well, welcome to the Extra Crispy podcast. I'm talking today with John Barnett, songwriter, singer, producer, banjo player, guy that lives out in the woods in Montana. Is it woods you live in?
It's woods, yeah.
It's woods.
Well, they're trees, so I'm assuming they're made out of wood.
You still got some cabin fever going on up there right now, or you getting out and about?
The sun's out today, so it's still that in-between season where you could have sun one day and then snow the next, so, you know, sad.
But so how long you been up there in Montana? What made you want to move? You were a Southern California dude, right?
Well, let's get technical, actually. I'm from Northern California.
Oh, sorry. Where the girls are warm, yeah?
Well, yeah, the girls are warm there. And, yeah, so growing up, we always thought it should be two states, so. Yeah, so I was raised up there. Ended up in Southern California for, gosh, 18 years. Then ended up back up here. Years ago, lived in Northern Idaho, outside of Coeur d'Alene.
Okay.
So it's not totally unfamiliar territory. Yeah.
So what made you want to move to, like, you're like one of the most remote people that I know. What made you want to leave California and go to Montana?
Oh, it was kind of a, I wouldn't say perfect storm. It was a storm, though. Yeah, I had been working at my job for quite a few years, and Marie had, you know, her dance studio, and we were just going crazy in life, and it got to be close to where I could retire, and it was like, you know, we need to live life differently. We had been up here visiting a church a few times, and I was looking for places, and and just decided this would be the place to go. And so, yeah, I retired. We sold the dance studio, sold our house, threw everything in a horse trailer, and moved to Montana. And then within about a year or so, the church that we had kind of moved to be part of kind of all fell apart. And, yeah.
Was it you?
maybe. depends on who you talk to. Put it that way. No. all kidding aside, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Those things happen. Some things don't work out. So, I mean, it closed down after I left. So, yeah, once you make a move of that grandeur, so to speak, and you're kind of stuck, you know. So we're not really, it's not like this week we're here and, you know, next month we go, well, you know, we should move to, I heard it's really nice in Texas in the summer. Maybe we should move there. You know? So, yeah, I don't have any regrets that we did it, but,
How's it affected your songwriting and, you know, it seems like over the last 10 years or so, you've had a lot more time to develop. How long have you been up there? Has it been 10 years, 15
it's
years?
It's been 13 years, going on 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've kind of jumped in there and you've been releasing these Cabin Fever albums and you've kind of just like, you've embraced the whole thing up there, huh?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, again, talking about other perfect storms, I had, you know, and you have your kind of your dreams in your mind. And so it's like, you know what, when we move here, I mean, we'll put our studio in and I'll have time to make music and make records and friends will fly in from all over and we'll make records and we'll just do all this. And we made 4 or 5 records here. But then the whole music industry shift, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, so even the days of, well, gosh, we can do a Kickstarter and we'll easily get $6,000-$10,000 and make a record. So people are finding it harder for that to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the whole industry and the idea of recouping. Seems to be has gone the way of the unicorn.
Yep.
And so yeah, I still I've kind of had to rethink what I do and rethink what success is. Out of necessity.
Yeah.
You know, so to speak. So yeah, I still write a lot. Do my little thing, make my little demos. You know, get on the phone with my musician friends, and we dream and make plans of, wow, when can we make another record? And you know the drill.
I know the drill, man. Yeah. It's just, I think at this point for everybody, there's the love that of creating in the studio. There's nothing like that. But then there's like, how do you pay for it now?
Yeah, and I don't even have to pay studio time, really. So
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just the logistics. And, you know, like you said, there's nothing. It's one thing to be in a studio with a bunch of ringers, you know, and you kind of, here's the charts and you play it. But there's nothing like when you get a group of people that are just your dear friends together, and you get to spend 4 or 5 days locked up in a cabin making music together.
Yeah,
there's just nothing like it is addicting, and just the way, you know, it happens and all goes down. So it's like when we record here, it's not the professional studio type vibe, you know. And it's not certainly, well, you guys got to get out of here. by, you know, 3 o'clock because we got a polka band coming in, you know.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much, like, the atmosphere when you're recording, the vibe, like, that is just, that's huge. I mean, you can go into a studio, you can knock something out pretty quickly, but boy, if you have room to stretch out and it's comfortable and you're with people you love and you're all on the same page, man, that you're setting up an atmosphere for some magical moments to happen.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, it really is addicting, you know. So to go, you know, if we were to go get our gang and go to a, you know, pro studio somewhere where it's a little bit more corporate, kind of, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
I remember things like when we were doing the Only Hymns and Matt Nall, our buddy, was playing drums, and then Jesse Barnett, my oldest son's engineering, and so when those guys get together, it's just chaos. It's there's nothing that's outside of the realm of possibility. So at one point, I'm out in the dark with my tractor, digging an old galvanized horse trough out of the snow. And next, you know, I got it dried off. We drug it in the house, put a kick mic in front of it, put a snare drum on top of it, put a kick pedal on this gal. And the next thing you know, they're tracking this thing that's this guy beating a snare drum on top of a galvanized horse trough, and it sounds amazing. Can't do that. Yeah, like downtown Nashville somewhere.
Yeah, that's one thing. I was listening back to the Only Hymns album this morning, and man, y'all got some just beautiful textures and sounds on that album. Just really, really cool stuff.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was kind of like, it was my son's dream. I when he first mentioned it to me, I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about, and it sounds like I don't want to do that. But, you know, the more we started trying to write songs, and first thing I did was I read a biography of, you know, John Newton, and then the person that I really kind of aligned with was Cooper, though, you know.
And for those who don't know who John Newton and Cooper are, you want to explain a little bit about that? So
yeah, well, John Newton's the famous Amazing Grace guy, you know, the slave trader, sea captain guy that, had almost a Apostle Paul experience, and he became this. He had enough problems of his own, and because he was a bit of a nonconformist, and so he ended up in this little town called Olney, Olney, in England. It was a little town. I think they had like a lace factory there. was the story. And then one of his best friends was this guy, William Cooper, who was a he was a poet, actually, and a Christian, and suffered from all kinds of depression issues and all that. And I'm sure he would have been on Mother's Little Helpers today, you know, had he been around. But he just wrote some just amazing lyrics, the stuff that I really identify with because, you know, facing his own personal demons and trying to, you know, well, if we're in Christ, we're a new creation and all things have become new. And you're going, well, I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
You know? Well, your feelings lie. You need to, you know, you know, that whole thing. And so, again, I just, you know, some of his songs just really hit me. And the fact that, you know, I mean, you know, as the story goes, he actually, Cooper actually lived in a cottage out back of John Newton's house. And so they would go and, you know, sit in their little English garden and talk about stuff. And, you know, if you could have heard some of those conversations.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so, yeah, the backstory to those hymns, they actually wrote all these hymns for not only church, but they had, I guess at one point they had quite the youth movement, youth group, whatever.
Yeah.
And so these were written to basically teach, you know, probably mostly illiterate kids the Bible.
Wow.
They were teaching tools and they were lesson tools and all that. So, you know, so it kind of puts a whole different spin on that, that as, you know, as we got deeper into the project, just really wanted to treat the songs with respect, you know? And so it wasn't just, well, it, you know, it's cool to make a, redo a hymns record or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so there was, and there's no music to these things. It's just, you know, books with lyrics in them.
Thank you.
people are trying to figure out what's happening with contemporary music. I think it's still too early to say.
Yeah.
You know, I think it just hasn't been around that long, and I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know that. We don't know how the. I mean, you know, we're in the U.S. and we actually don't know how long. I mean, I'll probably be gone, but the church will even have freedom of expression without it being hate speech or whatever. And so all of a sudden, you could be writing songs that are hate speech songs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just think it's way too early in the game. So lyrically, we talked about this last time. It's hard to kind of go, well, let's go down the creativity avenue, and how do you do that without seeming like you're anti-contemporary worship?
Yeah.
Because it's just in so many ways is the antithesis of that whole worldview. You know, because it is, you know, like you see these, 10 reasons why your church doesn't sing anymore, and 10 reasons why I did this, and 8 reasons for that. And so they blame contemporary worship, and they blame the worship leaders. I haven't read an article yet where they blame the pastor who wants that.
Oh, shut up.
Do you know what I'm saying, though? Because if we don't look at how we do church that accommodates and has an appetite for the, you know, lowbrow, you know, lowest, low-hanging fruit, chorusy stuff that everybody can sing because they heard it on, you know, the radio all week. If we don't bring that into the conversation, I'm not accusing. I'm just saying that has to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
When we're talking about how the church worships and what they say when they worship, I don't see that one being brought up.
Yeah, true. But I think even just in the music industry in general, just, you know, outside the church, it always seems like some of the most profound stuff. I mean, at least over the last few decades. I mean, I know, you know, you go back to the 60s, there was a lot of interesting stuff that was mainstream, and 60s and 70s. And, you know, there was a lot more diversity even on mainstream radio, a lot of different kinds of, you know, going from the Byrds to Jimi Hendrix to, you know, you just, Van Morrison, you had a wider variety of stuff that seemed to be mainstream at the time. But it does seem like, I don't know, ever since I've been a musician, a lot of the most interesting stuff has been happening at the margins and, you know, doesn't always connect with a mainstream audience. And yet, you know, who knows, decades down the road, you know, some of these people that may be relatively obscure in our time may end up being the ones that hold the test of time. But, and, you know, maybe some of that dynamics even, you know, happening in the church world. I think there's always that stuff that the stuff that resonates kind of at a popular level resonates because it is sometimes the easiest thing to get. But musically, lyrically, after you, sir. Well, yeah, but you've been writing songs like for a very long time. How has your approach, both creatively and your own spiritual journey, how are you different as a songwriter now than you were, say, 20 or 30 years? Or is there just continuity and you're just, you know, you've just kind of been on a trajectory and you're just more of what you were?
I think life happened.
Yeah.
We lost one of our daughters this last fall. Actually, my mom passed away yesterday.
Oh, dude. I'm so sorry, man.
She was 93.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you know, we've lost grandchildren, you know, just living life. And I think, I mean, I've always been, I won't say a rebel, but I've, you know, you're talking about a margins guy. I've always been kind of like, I'm not afraid to raise my hand and go, hey, I don't get what you just said. And in fact, I don't get how you can say that with all that confidence, but, you know, and so, you know, and it, part of it could be, you know, growing up in the 60s. I have no idea how that whole personality, you know, makeup thing goes. I mean, I don't know. So I may be a product of that, you know, being a boomer and all that. But so I think I just lived life. And so for me, and so this is just like me personally, this is not to cast a broad disparaging thing against writers or music or anything. But for me, the early days of, you know, trying to write for Vineyard and these things of like, you know, simple songs and simple lyrics and everybody could sing them and you could, for me as a writer, those didn't, one, they didn't ask hard questions and they didn't offer any answers. You know, again, and so how do you do that with kind of going this good, that bad, this, you know, that, just different. And so for me as a creative person and someone who actually, I that's how I process is I sit down with a guitar and I think things through and make up old jingles. But, you know, those songs, you know, the ones like that, it's like, okay, these lyrics, they don't deal with real life. And they certainly don't offer any answers. And so I've went down that avenue, you know, knowing that, you know, there's certain things that you can say or certain ways you can create things that pretty much put you out of the running for the Sunday morning set list. if that makes any sense.
Makes and perfect
so,
sense.
And so, yeah, I've just been like, well, what if it's, you know, we talk about, you know, what success means, like as an artist, as a creative, what does success mean? And I don't think enough people really sit down and kind of write that all out and go, okay, what am I, am I using, you know, quote unquote creativity or music, whatever, really as a diving board just to launch this whole other thing that I need.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, how do you answer that one? You know, just what, yeah. What is success? And, you know, even in today, I'm sure it was, you know, not only new, but, you know, if success as a creative or an artist or musician is like getting your name out there, and, you know, monetizing, you know, stuff to the nth degree and all that. You have to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You have to be that. I mean, you know, you do a podcast and you pastor church and you go out and play and do all this stuff. But, you know, at one point if I go, okay, I have this little band, you know, quote unquote, that I started some bright morning. And it's like, okay, so now do I get on Twitter and Instagram and right. Do I become a slave to content?
Yeah.
And there, so there are people who tell you, well, to be successful, that's what you need to do. And so this is just personal for me to go down that road to where I'm a slave to that. I go, no, when I'm successful is when I go through something and I sit down and I write something and I write some lyrics where somebody emails me and tells me, you said what I was feeling and I didn't even know I was feeling it. And so if that's success, then it's really based on what we are, what we've been given individually in our own expression. And then we're actually able to honestly express that. And so if I do that, then I don't have to, it's like, well, you don't have Instagram. No, actually, I don't. I tried Twitter and only because of fake Matt Redman, then I was obsessed with, and then he left.
And it was over.
And it was over. And so, you know, again, it's these are hard conversations. I don't hear a lot of people having them. You know, like I get a thing for this songwriter thing, and I get all these advertisements, like, you know, how to, you know, for you come to our, you know, our writing intensive thing, and, you know, fulfill your calling, you know, as a writer. For $700, you know, and so one, there's the money issue, but there's also the thing that's, you know, telling people that, well, if you do this, you can fulfill your calling. And it's like, I'm a rattle brain, you know, but I've kind of always had this idea of like, well, if you've been writing for, you know, a few decades and you've written, you know, a few hundred songs, I think you can call yourself a songwriter. You can go, that's a calling. Yeah. Think that that's something that I want to do and that's my calling. You know, it's like saying I'm a fisherman, but I never caught any fish.
Right.
there's these things, and I think, you know, again, in talking about, you know, the history or the future or whatever of contemporary worship music, I just think we're in the middle of it, and we haven't seen it yet.
Right.
The place where we need, you know, people like myself and you and some others that we would know, is that the downside of, you know, kind of walking off the main paved road and then hitting the gravel road and then headed for the ditch and then headed for the path through the trees and, you know, and exploring different music is, it seems like historically, if you look at people who have done that, they become kind of anti-church.
Yeah.
If not atheists. And so part of the struggle is going, man, how do I do this thing and still love the church and still be part of the church and still show up on Sunday morning and, you know, and do all that? Because the reaction is, well, the church doesn't understand our music. You know, therefore, this is bad, and that's bad. Next thing you know, I'm an atheist, and I got a blog, and I'm, you know, and basically going around doing house shows for other mad people.
That's right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. How do you do that? How do you walk that line? It's a part of like what I'm doing, and to some degree, you know, guys like you are doing, is like going, how do we explore this stuff without it becoming this us versus them?
Yeah.
You know, and the hard part is them really don't want to throw out an olive branch.
Right.
You know, and tell you, just walk this thing out.
You mentioned something a few minutes ago about getting, you know, you write a song, you kind of, that's really how you're processing the things that you're going through. You sit down with a guitar and you get these thoughts coming together. And I know myself, that is one of my prime ways that I connect with God. It's, you know, when I'm going through anything in life, you know, but particularly hard times, you know, to be able to, you know, reflect over my own life and find words that finally get at something going on within, and then, you know, putting that to melodies and words. Are there some songs out there by other artists that have done that for you?
Oh my gosh, I think again. Man, I'm getting old, so I've heard so many songs over the years. I think the latest one that just slays me is the Avett Brothers' No Hard Feelings. Mm-hmm.
when my body won't hold me anymore, and it finally lets me free, will I be ready? When my feet won't walk another mile, and my lips give their last kiss goodbye, will my hands be steady? When I lay down my fears, my hopes and my doubts, the rings on my fingers and the keys to my house, with no hard feelings. When the sun hangs low in the west and the light in my chest won't be kept held at bay any longer, when the jealousy fades away and it's ash and dust for cash and lust, and it's just hallelujah and love and thought, love in the words, love in the songs they sing in the church, and no hard feelings. Lord knows they haven't done much good for anyone. Kept me afraid and cold with so much to have. Nobody won't hold me anymore, and it finally lets me free. Where will I go? Will the trade winds take me south through Georgia grain, or tropical rain, or snow from the heavens? Will I join with the ocean blue, or run into a savior true, and shake hands laughing, and walk through the night straight to the light, holding the love I've known in my life, and no hard feelings. Lord knows they haven't done much good for anyone. Kept me afraid and cold with so much to have.
That song, it just, you know, I'm like, okay, that's, it just ticks off so many boxes in my, you know, emotional, you know, littered emotional landscape. Just dealing with, I mean, you know, having dealing with death, for example, and, you know, realizing that, you know, gosh, the you know, the church, I'm not sure these days we actually have a good theology for suffering, because yeah. it offends our theology of sovereignty. It offends our theology of, you know, all these other things. And you go, hey, you know what, man, none of us are getting out of here alive, and we suffer, and so, you know, so things like No Hard Feelings, that song, it deals with a lot of things without, you know, Christianese lyrics, and some of them you make raise your eyebrow and go, well, I don't know about this or I don't know about that, but to quote a songwriter friend of mine, what is that? We don't know what we don't know what we don't what we don't know.
You may have heard, singer.
Yeah, you may have heard that song.
I may have heard it.
We don't know what we don't know. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know. Bumping into mystery. Everything we think and see. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know.
But how do you, yeah, how do you, how does a pastor follow up something like that with a sermon? Well, we don't know what we don't know. And then it's like, okay, let's, you know, let's turn to Philemon. And
that's the kind of stuff that keeps your church steady under 100 people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, yeah. And so, yeah, that would be like one of the ones that just really resonates with me lately. I don't know if you can mention his name anymore, but I've always loved Ryan Adams.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a crazy son of a gun.
He is.
You know, and probably crashed his career. But, you know, songwriting wise and artistically, it's like, oh my gosh, you know. I mean, you know, if you can get past his little boy tantrums. You know, so guys like that. And then I've always been the I just love, you know, unfortunately we've kind of labeled this stuff Americana, but you know, more traditional music that's come out of that whole history of, you know, music in America. And you know, just been a fan of that, and kind of a nerd geek, you know, exploring that.
How has your, because I pick up stuff in the songs you've written, I mean, even some of your most recent stuff, and probably it is exactly what you're saying, you know, it's you're trying to navigate like some of these very, very just gut-wrenching things that you've been through, particularly in the past year. How has your understanding of God evolved along the way, and what does that look like at the moment? I mean, to the extent that you can understand the ununderstandable.
Yeah, I think the only line that I drew is that I believe in Jesus. You know, the only lines that I drew is, okay, there is God, and yeah. I believe in the incarnation in Jesus, you know, I believe in the birth, death, and the resurrection of Jesus. So those aren't negotiable.
Yeah.
You know, but everything else is on the table, you know, and so to be able to wander down that road and go, I just don't, you know, like for example, and again, I mean, you know me enough, my mind is a bit of a scary place, but you know, I find myself like praying and just going, Jesus, so Is there anybody that you actually talk to? Like talk, like we're talking right now.
Yeah.
You know, because people go, well, I heard from the Lord and the Lord showed me this. And I'm going, because like, do you talk to anybody? I mean, I would like to get in on some of that. Like
right.
You know, because I really have a lot of questions about things. If that makes any sense, you know.
Perfect sense.
Yeah. It's like, how do you walk this stuff out? And so sometimes I'm just like, for days, my prayers would be, God, I'm just numb. I am like, I'm in a fog. I don't get this. I don't understand that. People, even debating, what happens at the moan of death and what happens at this and what happens at that? It's like, gosh, we don't really know.
Yeah.
An example would be, I think you were on part, in fact, you sent a Wikipedia link, was that thing on the face hole, you know, about what happened to Jesus, you know? You know, where did he go? Did he go to hell? It's like, yeah, we kind of, I don't know. I don't know how that works. I you know what I mean? And so I have not seen the answer compelling enough to go, oh, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know what I hope happened.
Right.
But I don't, like, I'm just not willing to, like, die on that hill, you know? And the freeing part is because I'm not so, so much of who I am isn't dependent on that. I can have those discussions and actually kind of laugh about it, and I don't know. But it's like, you know, you can disagree, but you can't prove me wrong.
Right.
You know? And yeah, and so those, you know, those kind of things, and you know, again, like you're talking about, so lyrically, if you realize right out of the bat as a writer, go, and I know you struggle with this stuff, is to go, well, if I say that, boy, that sure takes it out of the running for, you know, the next worship slot.
Yeah.
But if you're not going for that, I mean. You know, basically, you know, there's 52 weeks, and, you know, in a year, there's, you know, four songs in the set list. There's this, you're competing for like one slot, maybe.
Right.
You know, and to give up like being who you are to fight for that, it's kind of silly to me, but, you know, and so there's things you can go, man, I know this, I just sunk myself here for the next, you know, top CCLI hit. You know, because I said things like, I think this little thing I wrote last week, you know, you're there when I wink at temptation. You're there when I toil in vain. You know, when I feign adoration and then look for someone to blame.
Ooh.
You can't say that on Sunday morning.
No.
And certainly, if you did sing it, you'd be looking over at your pastor to see if he's singing it.
That's right.
And so, you know, again, it's not trying to be like outlandish or challenge. It's just like, no, actually, that's the crap that goes on in my head. You know, and so we need that, you know, dare I say, you know, we need the people who are actually lyrically prophetic. And saying that stuff, even if there's no market for it, or even if the audience is small, if Crispin Schroeder's been given something to say and say in a particular way, you best ought to be doing that.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
No. Yeah. And so stuff like this and like your podcast, and, you know, I've listened to quite a few of them, so... Kind of, you know, a bit nervous in that actually you've talked to smart people. But, you know.
Well, the host isn't that smart, though, so.
Maybe you just make people look smart.
But, to paraphrase a Mark Twain quote, I tell people all the time, I'm skeptical of any church that would have me as the pastor. So
and,
I set the bar really low.
I know, man. It's funny stuff. But I don't know. I don't know where I don't know where that all goes. I know that, like I said, when we first started talking, I said, you know, I've had to kind of reevaluate what success is. And so for me, again, for me personally, success is finding what I've been peculiarly given to say, and the way I've been given to say it, and to do that to the best of my, you know, ability or whatever. Anointed One was just, I mean, I just, you know, I was like the guy at the, you know, that showed up in California in, you know, 1849 and went, hey, look, there's gold on the ground. you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, I'll pick that up, put it in my pocket. And so I didn't have a whole lot to do with that. So it's not like I struggled over it or, you know, it just kind of this thing happened. And since I know that all too well, it's, I'm not the guy that runs around and goes, hey, maybe you don't know who I think I am. I wrote da da da.
Yeah.
You know? So I was, you know, I was there kind of in the, you know, at least when it came to, the Vineyard, movement, you know, it's kind of there close to the beginning, you know, but before that, you know, there was, we didn't invent that
right thing,
you know, I mean, my gosh, you know, Calvary Chapel and the whole Maranatha music and that whole Jesus movement. Where do you think those choruses and all that stuff came out of?
Right.
We just stumbled onto something a little crazier and weren't afraid to fall into it.
Yeah.
so that whole thing, that had been kind of been going on for a while anyways. And, I still had my day job and I never quit that. And so, yeah, it's been let's see, 35 years I've been at this or so.
Wow.
So I can go, yeah, I can write a song, I think. But yeah.
I think you can as well. I've noticed that about you.
Yeah. It's like, I told our friend Brian, I go, yeah, I'm prolific. I'm mediocre, but I'm prolific.
And, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can write a lot of so-so stuff.
You know, I tell people all the time, like I played a gig the other night with this local blues guy, but anytime I play a gig with him, like I've played a handful of gigs with him over the last few years, but I've never once got to go to a practice with him. So it's like, my philosophy on playing out with other people, particularly when there's no practice involved, is like, just try not to suck. You know, you don't have to be amazing. Just try not to suck. And I kind of apply that to songwriting as well. You know, just try not to suck.
Try not to suck. Well, I think there's, I mean, you know, when it comes to like the technical part, I think if you do it long enough, you catch what works pretty quick, and what's not working, you catch it quicker.
Yeah.
And so you just learn to not make mistakes, you know, like, well, I like the way this phrase reads, but it doesn't sing for crap. It's a tongue twister. Right. So how can I say the same thing and that where it actually rolls off the tongue easier? And that's, you know, that's one of those, I think, guess you learn from like doing it, recognizing it up front. You know? Or kind of trying to juggle with the, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, you know, format.
Yeah.
You know, and juggle, you know, that's where like some of these, you know, songwriters I go to school on, you know, I mean, I go to school on Jeff Tweedy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, why did you, I thought you were going to go to this chord and you sure didn't, you know? You know what I mean? And you're like, what chord is that? You know? And, you know, how these songwriters put stuff together. It doesn't, you know, when it comes to contempt, you know, what we do on Sunday, we people need to sing it. It needs to be, you know, that thing of, you know, the cultural thing of music is you've heard, you know, certain styles so much, you kind of intuitively know where it's going.
Right.
And so we want our congregations to intuitively know where things are going. I mean, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I think there's something to that in a sense of, I don't know. I think at the church I pastor, I always want to do a couple of things that people can easily connect with, but I always want to have something, one song or two songs that scare people, you know, or that maybe you don't sing along with. I mean, we did this even on Easter this last Sunday. I wrote this new song and we did it after worship. And the song was more, I think I'd sent it to you, a Dreaming and Waking, but it was genuinely out of my reflections on my own journey with God and the disciples and, you know, all this stuff in the season of Lent. But it wasn't terribly like didactic and, you know, in the sense of like just communicating doctrine. It was really more of a little bit more stream of consciousness, the lyrics. But, you know, I when I think of, you know, like a songwriter like Tom Petty, you know, like I'm in awe of that one song, Learning to Fly, that he wrote. Like that song, one of the simplest songs that he ever wrote, and it has impacted me in so many different ways in my life, you know, like when I was a teenager and it first came out, it was just a good song. But I found the last 10 years, man, just that simple lyric, learning to fly, but I ain't got wings, coming down is the hardest thing, man. It's like it's so profound because I feel like that one little line just speaks to so much of the journey. You know, you're trying this and occasionally you do get off the ground and you're experiencing some transcendence. Everything is coming together and then, you know, and then you're back down again, you know, and that's the hard part. And it's just this continual cycle, but it's so interesting how that little song has hit me in so many different ways. And the lyrics themselves, you know, in the verses, it's not like they, you know, really lock into any kind of narrative, which is probably what works about so many of Tom Petty's lyrics. But I find that, you know, there is something in lyrics that don't even nail everything perfectly down that kind of frees your imagination to kind of apply that to your own personal life in a way that if it was so defined lyrically, it might kind of force your imagination in one certain way. And I think I want to see, even in the church world, I think there are times where it's a shame that I think for most people, if you want to be impacted by the beauty of music, you want to be impacted by something that is transcendent, that just connects with you in a deep way, you don't initially think of going to church to experience that. You think of going to hear a concert, you know, Jeff Tweedy or somebody. And that certainly has been the case in my life, but I don't know. I'm always kind of interested in, like, you know, how can we create moments where somebody can just be impacted by something that is beautiful and heartfelt, and maybe it doesn't explain everything. Maybe it doesn't even teach you something, but maybe it can connect with something going on inside of you, you know, probably back to like what you said earlier.
Yeah. I don't think we've done a good job. This is really treading on thin ice here, but I don't think we've done a good job with mysticism.
Yeah.
In the church, I think we've reacted to it and almost become afraid of it, or it's this evil, you know, boogaboo under the couch, you know, this thing of, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, talking about, well, we don't know what we don't know, and this thing of, you know, this transcendent thing that music does, whatever kind of genre or whatever, like, moves that thing inside of you. It's like, evolution can work this way and survival of the fittest and all these things we go, but, like, where does art come from?
Right.
There's that, I don't know if you've seen that movie, it's something, The Cave of Dreams. They found these cave drawings, right? Oldest ones they found. They dated them like 34,000 years ago or something.
Was that like in France?
Yeah. And these drawings of like these amazing drawings of these horses, you know, and bison and all this. And they're not like stick drawings. They're actually like amazing. And so you could look at that. But if you look at it from the perspective we're talking about, this thing, this inhumanity that looks at something and then like wants to create. You know, it's like, what do you do with that? How do you even parse that out or figure it out? You know, what is it about something that touches something inside of you that you can't put your finger on?
Yeah.
You know, and we kind of get nervous about that stuff. It's like I was talking to my wife the other day, and I go, okay, you know, because we raised four kids, and then we have a bunch of grandkids now. I said, where does that thing come from when you line up a bunch of grandkids at the counter and you give them paper plates or pieces of paper and a box of crayons and they draw something and they bring it over to you and give it to you and go and says, I made this for you.
Mm.
Like, where does that come from, man?
Yeah.
What is it in us that... Yeah, the whole act of creating and then giving and going, I made this for you. Now, as a dad, you know, when my kids would do that, you know, and even as a grandfather, it doesn't matter that it's not a Rembrandt.
Right.
It's like how I perceive that and what that touches in my heart. You can see where I'm going with this. It's separate from actually the quality, you know, quote unquote quality of the work of art. And so you know, again, when we're talking about being creative or whatever, we do these things, and we actually, without getting, you know, sounding too churchy, there are things that we present to the Lord.
Yeah.
And we go, hey, I made this. And it's okay if you're the only one who hears it.
Yeah, that's good.
And so those kind of things. And music, you know, you talk about Tom Petty. I'm like, oh, my gosh. He was, you know, I remember, you know, in a conversation years ago, and they were talking about, you know, we needed to simplify lyrics because the songs were getting too complicated. I'm like, you know, kind of, unfortunately, the guy that raised my hand and go, you know, I was actually, I can't remember this. I was at the Irvine Amphitheater and saw Tom Petty last night. And for over 2 hours, everybody there sang every song.
Now some say life will beat you down. And it'll break your heart, steal your crown. So start it out, for God knows when. But I guess I'll know when I get there.
Like, so how, like, so when you become a Christian, do you lose the ability to, you know, digest and, you know, song lyrics?
Right.
You know? And so, again, but it's part of this thing we're all talking about. And you know, I don't, I mean, that this was years ago, you know? And so, you know, nowadays the biggest thing we can do is argue about Sloppy Wet Kiss.
Right.
You know? And again, you know, I mean, I don't really know John Mark McMillan. I met him once, hung out with him, but, you know, I don't think he was trying to be provocative. I mean, I'll give him that.
Right.
I think he was trying to express something and trying to find words for it that, you know, that one line that speaks 1,000 words.
Yeah.
You know? And I get what, you know, he was trying to say. You know, or the latest was, I think you've probably seen the debates against, well, is God's love reckless?
Right.
You know, we just fight about all this stuff and you go, whoa, you know, when it came to him loving me, I feel like he was being kind of reckless.
Right, right. You
know, he might have thought about that for a while.
It's funny how nobody ever pulls out any of the lyrics from the Book of Psalms and starts arguing over those, because boy, you could look at some of those lyrics and go, yeah, you can't say this.
Oh, you can't. I mean, I mean, even things like, you know, using the word wrath.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you can't use it. And I'm like, okay. Well, some people can use it. You know? So that gets into, like, well, you're writing lyrics, and there's things you can say to one denomination, another one won't say.
Right.
You know? And so all that. But, you know, I think people are, you know, again, this is, I think, so it's not even like capital T. I wonder if there's just, you know, more and more people who are way off the radar that are just going, this vocabulary that we have is so limited. You know, yeah. And yeah, it's like, oh yeah, we should sing the Psalms, like all of them. You know, really? You know, or we should sing, heck, let's sing Ecclesiastes.
Oh.
You know, you know, again, it's like, what do you do with that stuff? And I think people, and I'm, you know, I go through this, you know, I know you go through this. It's like, how do I say, well, first of all, how do I actually say anything that's worth any value that actually means anything? And then how do I say that in a way that's real, that's like real language and that's a real thing. And, you know, my grandkids were over a couple weeks ago and my granddaughter was like, can you put on da 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 on, you know, Pandora? And I'm like, I guess, you know, I'd have to add that. It's not on any of my stations, you know? And, so she figured out who the, you know, song was. I'm like, you know this song? And she's like, oh, yeah, we sang it at Awana's, you know? And I'm like, oh, you know, okay, they like it. You know, it's fine. You know, I'm not going to say that's, you know. But I'm like, listen to the lyrics. I'm like, yeah, you got nothing going on here, man. You know, like the kids sing it and they do this thing. And it works for a certain thing, but I'm like, this is the same. It's kind of like those, you know, those little games you get that were like the refrigerator magnets. You can make phrases.
Right.
It's kind of like that. It's like we have the Sunday morning song vocabulary thing. We just mix them around. And then we say it's okay because we put it under this category of people connect with it. You know? And at the same time, we'll tell people, you know, theology matters in your songs. And, you know, the most successful ones are, you know, they're theologically, neutral or benign.
Yeah.
They're theologically, yeah, they're just, you can't tell where they land. You're not making any statement.
Yeah, it's, I think that's part of why, I mean, true creativity and the arts, you know, I've heard language for years, you know, the church, you know, wants to get more involved in the arts and stuff, but oftentimes what that really means is that, no, we want you to be more creative within this very, very small sliver, you know, you can use these words, you can use these phrases, and it can sound like this. And as long as you can be creative within that, then, you know, we're going to say that we're a champion of the arts. But, you know, the arts, kind of like what you were saying a minute ago, like there is, I think any of the great songwriters, any great songwriters that, you know, we could list between us, there is something prophetic because they weren't simply operating within this one little narrow thing. It wasn't just marketing or propaganda. It was, you know, they were actually able to come up with new language to operate outside of that framework a bit. And it is kind of a funny thing to me, you know, because I've seen these things oftentimes, you know, like we're going to have a conference at our church on the arts, but most of my experience of those types of things has been, it's really not about creating something meaningful. It is really about serving the purpose of this kind of Sunday morning service, where we need a quick inspirational song that everybody, you could sing the chorus 20 times, and you know, and hey, look, I mean, I'm not saying there's not a place for that, but I think that's part of the problem, part of the difficulty in being a creative person, is that as soon as you kind of lock things in and get things all where you understand it, like that's really the place of complacency and really where your art begins to start failing. Like at some point you're going to have to dismantle all that and come to it from a whole different point. And I feel like oftentimes in the, in modern worship music, but it's certainly even in just pop music in general, that's what kind of leads to this just mediocre, least common denominator. And it really doesn't strike me as, you know, even in mainstream pop music, I don't know how many of the songs that are on the radio right now that are top 40, anybody's going to be talking about them in 20 years. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just a crotchety old guy that's, kicking against what's coming up. But I do think that there is, when I see, some of the greatest songwriters that have come along, like there is always this ability to look at things from the outside. It kind of reminds me of a song you wrote, Outside Looking In. But
well, that's, like that particular song, that actually came out of these emotions of going like, gosh, how can I even explain this? This feelings of, okay, like the church is this way, and church music is this way, and all these things are this way, and I don't fit into any of that. Like, yeah. I don't, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't fit. And like, is there a place for people like me? And again, so people who have experienced that can identify with that and go, oh yeah, I get that, our task is to kind of ask these questions and talk about them, not going, well, that's all bad, and therefore, God hates your worship and your sacrifices, and you know what I'm saying? It's like how do you do that? We talk about creativity, but we always, again, I don't know where this all will go in the years to come, and I'll probably be gone, but we talk about creativity, but we're always trying to fit it back into that 45-minute Sunday morning box.
Yeah.
And so even in the back of our mind, we're talking about creativity, we're going, well, how does that fit into this? How does that fit into that? If that makes any sense, how do we, how does this translate on Sunday morning? And so we go, well, we're going to have people come up and paint. Well, those people go up and paint, and they paint whatever they want to. Well, the person up there with a guitar doesn't do whatever he wants to.
Right.
and given that, there's also that thing, it's like, forever, however many churches there are in America and, around the world, that are doing this thing with a person with a guitar, most of them are not creatives.
Yeah.
You look at all kinds of different, worship leader pages and forums, and these guys are just trying to figure out. I mean, people were going like, so how do I put my strings on? And so they're not people who've had the experience like I've had or you had, who grew up like putting a record on a record player and listening to it and go, man, what's this guy saying? What's this music doing? And live their lives, immersed in this thing of music. And so for most of them, they're not, and so to hold them, up against some other kind of value is not fair to them, I would say. But for creative people, that kind of rise up out of that muck, again, eventually they find they don't fit.
Yeah.
And that's where, the problems start. You know, and so how do you, man, how do you live your life doing that? And kind of going, well, you know, it's almost like the popular, top CCLI songs now, sung the most, are certainly derivative of each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say almost to the point of incest. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just not, it's, is this the best we, you know, if we're going to do that, let's not talk about creativity.
Right.
Like, don't talk about it. Because you're not going to do it, you know. There has to be more of the creativity than, you know, nailing some pallets to the back wall and putting a big plexiglass thing around, you know, the drummer and putting some red and blue lights on the stage. And, you know, instead of using mic stands, the singers will hold the mics. And the girls will do the Kim Walker pose. There has to be more to creativity than that. If that's it, if, you know what I'm saying? Going back to these guys drawing these horses in a cave. Like, they actually are more creative than the church is.
Yeah.
You know, dare I'd say. And I could be wrong, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people disagree with me and get all up in arms, and it's like, well, you don't understand, you know, we had church and we had more, you know, we got 800 people and we baptized 300 people and we did this and we're right and we have the numbers to prove it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just a fight I'm not willing to have, and it doesn't open up conversation. That's the road I'm trying to walk down. I was like, man, I'm part of the church, you know, the church. You know, I go to church. I don't know. I've kind of drawn lines around, okay, this is parts of my faith I'm not willing to compromise. But these are other things I'm like, I don't know. Can we talk about these things without getting all upset?
Last Thursday, I was invited to help out with a Maundy Thursday mass with this Episcopal priest friend of mine. He's like, hey, can you come do a few songs at this mass? And I've collaborated with this guy on a few occasions for some specials. You know, we did a Van Morrison mass couple of months ago, which was really cool. But this was my first time to actually do a mass with him where I'm not doing like Van Morrison or U2 or something, you know, which has been, it's been an interesting experience for me doing those kinds of things, because it's like, I've been in a regular Episcopal liturgy, but I'm doing, you know, more modern kind of sounding stuff. But, you know, when he asked me to do it, I was like, well, I don't know a ton of hymns, and I'm not even sure what, you know, Episcopal or Anglican hymns would even be. I mean, I'm sure I know some, but I was like, what am I supposed to do? And he said, you know, just do whatever you want. Here's the liturgy. Just play some songs that kind of fit in these different things. He said it was at a retirement center. He's like, it's not like really a participatory thing. It's just a quick 30-minute service. But So, you know, I did a couple of my songs and Ryan Delmore's Jesus Name, and, you know, just trying to hang on and not mess the liturgy up, just trying not to suck again. But I got to tell you, just the liturgy itself, there is something so different than the typical evangelical format, because it's, you know, in the evangelical churches, or, you know, I mean, not just evangelical, but what's become, you know, just mainstream non-denominational churches in America, you know, the sermon is kind of the centerpiece. And I love that, like, in the liturgies, that there's just this, it's not really about the sermon. I mean, the central point is communion. It was a really interesting thing that in the midst of this liturgy, there was a corporate confession of sin, you know, like that was just part of what, you know, like everybody confesses their sin and we say this prayer together. We have scripture readings with no commentary, like just being impacted just by the scripture itself and left to, you know, apply it to your life however you're encountering God in that moment. And there was something that I kind of came away, it was a very very impacting experience for me, even though I was, you know, a little nervous about where I was supposed to play and everything. I'm still not terribly comfortable in doing that. But I really do think that part of maybe even the problem, you know, some of the issues that we're talking about is that you know, some of this stuff that has emerged from a really good place. I mean, the Jesus movement was a powerful thing, but you know, sometimes the form that has kind of emerged out of that has kind of, you know, because evangelicalism, I think, has always been about like trying to proclaim the gospel to people and connect with them. And, you know, you have the seeker movement that, you know, and it's the motive of trying to do these worship services the way that they're done. I think it's a sincere motive, but it's not a surprising thing to me that so many people, you know, from my generation that have grown up in evangelical churches are gravitating towards, you know, more mainline denominations or even like Eastern Orthodox, Anglican, Presbyterian. And because there is a richness in it, and because it isn't so kind of consumeristic, you know, I don't know. I kind of walked away wondering, you know, I think sometimes even the form of what we're doing and perhaps the thing that we put the most emphasis on is the, you know, the guy preaching. And I think so often the worship then is just relegated to like this pregame show. It's the jingles. It's the stuff that, you know, engage people mildly, but there's nothing, you know, because you're end up treating God as this kind of consumable good and service that you're trying to get people to just agree with an idea. That's the point of it. And at some point, I don't think people get to really experience transcendence. They don't get to experience, you know, because it is so locked into this narrowly defined thing that is serving another purpose. Like it's almost as if worship music itself is really just trying to point towards the message rather than this actual place where we can experience God in various ways. I mean, I'm not just talking about like charismatic. I'm talking about, you know, man, when I've heard some of your songs that just, even the songs that you've written out of like these really difficult places, and sometimes that's the exact kind of song I need to hear. I don't need to hear something that's just going to say that you know, hey, everything's just going to work out great, and you know, but you know, God, where are you? Where are you in the midst of this? I don't know what's going on. You know, doesn't mean I don't believe in you, but I don't know. Just been thinking about that.
Yeah, I actually started going to a Presbyterian church and year or so ago, and my sons go there, and my daughter goes there, and my grandkids go there, and we go there, and it's, you know, kind of like it wasn't my first choice, but you know, in light of circumstances, I'm like, well, yeah, there's might be some of their doctrines. I'd kind of go, nah, I don't think so. But it is, and I've never been like, never been really indoctrinated or whatever, experienced, you know, real liturgical stuff before. But they're, you know, so their service is kind of a liturgical thing, you know. And so you do the thing, you know, you go through the, you go through the process, and you go through this thing of like confession of sin, and you confess together, and then, you know, and there's always the forgiveness part of it. It all leads to communion every week. And so I'm kind of going, okay, well, we don't necessarily sing these songs that are what we would call, quote unquote, intimate, you know, songs to Jesus, or have this kind of experience that, you know, maybe in our circles we would be used to. But there's this other thing, you know, again, we're talking about things that are transcendent. We're talking about the ability of the Holy Spirit to do what he wants to do, you know?
Yeah.
And to change people's lives. And so, you know, when I grew up in this kind of a... I'm finding out years later it was pretty much fundamentalism, but this Baptist church, you know. And that always led to, you know, the quote-unquote going forward.
Yeah.
You know, the altar. Everything led to the altar call. Well, the church I go to, it doesn't lead to that. It leads to the communion table. It leads to the Eucharist.
Wow.
But again, throughout the service, there's, you know, the pastor does a great job of just going, hey, look, I know we're all in process here. We're all in transition. We're all in different places. If you feel uncomfortable, you know, with this, you know, you want to talk about this, you can participate as little or as much as you feel comfortable with. I mean, that is spoken, you know, throughout the service every week. You know, yeah. So it is a place where, again, it's this balance. You go, okay, well, you know, they kind of hold a few things out. You go, I don't know. At the same time, you have the server that's, you know, that's willing to take the risk to go, hey, I know we're all different places. You know, and you know, like the pastor always says, he has this little motto. You know, you don't have to believe what we believe to be our friend. You know, I'm going, okay. I can hang with that, you know. And then we do different songs, you know. The songs that are, you know, picked are certainly not. I think a month or so ago we did 10,000 Reasons or something, but you know, and I'm not the worship leader. I'm kind of the utility instrumentalist kind of guy, you know. And so you know, I'll say, you know, so I've kind of experienced that. I'm not ready to become the neo liturgical crowd.
Yeah.
But you know, again, that there are some guys like, do you know Ryan Flanagan? You might have known.
I don't think so.
He was around for a while, and then so he's kind of has this thing called Liturgical Folk, and they've made a few records, and you know, so they do all this, and I talked to him a little bit here and there, and you know, you know, we look at that and go, man, there's this kind of big movement towards this. And you go, man, so I think you could ask the question is, okay, for a bunch of young people, whatever it is we've been doing doesn't scratch that itch for them.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're going to something and they're going, there's something in this mixed up, crazy world that I need something solid. I need something I can hang my hat on, I can hang on to. And so I think, again, small T think, I think there's a hunger for something that's historical, you know, in quotes, you know, that's just, you know, church historical, that's been around for a while, that's something that's stable. And at the same time has that mystery transcendence. It's like they look at communion a whole different way than we do.
Yeah.
Without jumping into the whole transubstantiation thing. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, no, it actually has this transcendent mystery, God is here element to it. And so I think people are hungry for that, you know, especially the attraction of, well, this is, you know, this is ancient historical church. I'm like, well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I think people, you know, in this generation is, I mean, I grew up in the Cold War years, you know, people in the neighborhood with bomb shelters and, you know, we're going to bomb Cuba and, you know, Vietnam and the whole hippie thing and all that. So, I, you know, I grew up in that. So I grew up in the era where the rapture seemed pretty attractive.
Right.
You know, I could never biblically sort that out. But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Jesus is coming, man. It can't get any worse. So it's like, well, yeah, it got worse. It's just creepy.
Here we are.
It's just creepy now, you know?
Yeah.
And so you just have these people. It has to be. For all of our, you know, bluff and bluster, you know, young people have to be unsettled. They have to be, you know, wondering, man, how do I make sense of that? And so I think there's a possibility there is a group of people that are hungry for something other than let's show up on Sunday, we're sing some songs, we're going to say, come Holy Spirit, and we're going to wait for this thing to happen that we've defined that this is what it is when God shows up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like this thing. It's like, oh, well, you know, well, God hasn't showed up yet. It's like, really? You know? And so I think there's a thing to go, oh, wait a minute. I would venture to say, and it's almost a scary thing, is like lately I've felt the presence of the Holy Spirit more in communion than I think I ever have.
Wow, yeah.
And that I can actually, you know that, what do you call it, warm fuzzy, that presence, that whatever?
Yeah.
It's like, man, I take that piece of bread and I dip it in that cup, you know, and the person says, you know, the body of Christ broken for you, John. You know, the blood of Christ shed for you, take it in faith. Man, I get goosebumps now when I do that.
Yeah.
And so I think people, you know, young people are just looking for something. And I think musicians are too, and I think songwriters and all this. And so, you know, even like I said, even with the thoughts of, I know, contemporary worship, but it's still in flux.
Oh, it is.
It hasn't, you know, at least that's my opinion for whatever it's worth, is it, you know, the dust hasn't settled yet, you know, and the dark side of the whole, you know, CCLI world and the dark side of money, you know, the dark side of how the industry works, you know. And that's just, again, there's so much money in that thing, people will go for it.
Yeah.
And what happens when that goes away?
Right.
You know? I mean, it's basically a monopoly that's owned by a huge, they got bought out by a huge corporation. But that's a whole nother world. And so as artists who are willing to be starving artists, you know, for the sake of I can sleep for, you know, conscience.
Right.
You know, if we're, you know, as a writer, as you as a writer, if you're writing specifically for this 45-minute thing on Sunday morning, then you're just kind of making a widget. And you can kind of go, well, I'm doing it. You can spin it like, well, I'm there to serve and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, but maybe you're meant for something else. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then so these songs become, again, we can spin it with all the language that we want. I'm probably really treading on thin ice here. But when it comes down to it, they're jingles.
Yeah.
There are things to get a reaction from people. And, you know, it's like the old, well, this is spontaneous. It's like, no, it's not. You know, you're a musician, you know better.
Yep.
It's like, man, I've had that hook in my head for, you know, and I just make it this thing. It's go, okay. It's because if we use, I know this is really, really, I tend to be pretty random. It's like if we use the word spontaneous, somehow the connotation is it's like it's spiritual. Like right. Now, this is like the real thing now. That other thing before was just blah, 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 but now it's real, man. Now, like, the Holy Spirit is moving. And so that means is like Crispin Schroeder's sitting in his house at his piano, and he's praying, and he's reading the Bible, and he has this idea in his head, and he writes this thing. And goes, oh, that's not Holy Spirit inspired, but right. This thing where you repeat the same thing for 12 minutes is inspired. And, you know, again, it's like, how do we have those conversations to go, maybe, you know, but saying so doesn't make it so.
You know? Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And
well, I got to cut this off, but because I've got a thing I've got to get to here
okay.
in just a few minutes, but I would love to continue this conversation, so maybe we'll pick up where we're ending this one, and maybe in another few weeks we can revisit some of these things, because I really do believe that this is it's really important stuff, and I just appreciate the stuff that you've written over the years, and just who you are as a person, because I do think, you know, you up there in your cabin with your cabin fever, you're just, you know, I think you are turning out something that is contending with truth, and it certainly resonates, so... thank you for doing what you're doing, and keep on doing it, and you willing to come back on here in a few weeks?
Absolutely. I got nothing else going on.
All right. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? Always a joy to talk to John Barnett. Hey, if you like what you heard, you can check John Barnett out on Spotify. Just look up John Barnett, or you can type in Americana Congregation. And I believe on Facebook, he's got something called Some Bright Morning. And he's got videos up of some of his songs that we didn't include on this episode, but had a conversation with John since I recorded this, and I think we're gonna come back and talk about music a little bit more on the next episode, the history of music and things. And anyway, if you enjoyed what you hear, share it with somebody. Go to iTunes, give us some love, give us a 5-star review, leave some words. Don't take you any time. This costs you nothing except some time to listen to, and it's blessed your life. So help other people get a blessing. Until next time, may all your conversations be extra crispy. Thanks for listening.